I love my dog. I got to tell you guys that I love my... I don't understand people who don't like dogs. You ever meet those people? My friend goes, I don't like dogs. I was like, what the fuck? He goes, no, I'm allergic to dogs. I was like, oh, too bad for you. You're allergic to fun, love, and good times. Because that's all little doggy's going to give you. I wish my dog could talk. Why can't they talk? God damn it. They know what you're saying. They're just like the Viet Cong. They know. I was thinking if my dog could talk, I think the first thing he'd say is, oh, I can talk. Let's get one thing straight, Jimmy. I know I'm a good boy. Why do we talk to our dogs like they're hard of hearing foreigners? You would never talk to a person like that. Hey, Mike, you're a good boy. Thank you. Stay away from me. My dog is a rescue dog, so his personality is already kind of prefabbed. I don't have much influence. I like to, you know. He knows I'm a pushover, so when I ask him to do something, I ask him to sit, and he'll do it if he feels like it. You know, I'm like Brownie. I call him Brownie, by the way, because he's brown, and I'm a writer. I'm like, Brownie, sit. And he's just like, I'm like, no, Brownie, sit. I'm like, all right, here's a treat. I don't care. I'm a pushover. He's a rescue dog. So somebody told me I should take him to a dog park and socialize him. And I did. It was a bad idea. It was totally humiliating because all the other dogs are well-trained, right? All the other dogs, they're like, oh, Fluffy, sit. Oh, I'll sit. Oh, yeah. I'll double sit. And of course, Brownie won't do anything I tell him, so I just decided whatever Brownie's doing, I'll just pretend like I told him to do it. It's like, that's right, Brownie, stand up tall. Stay standing, there you go. Now run around like a maniac. Nip at the kids. Shit right there, shit right there. Good boy. Good boy. But Brownie got sick not too long ago, so we had to take him to the vet. And the vet tells me, he goes, you gotta give your dog these pills. He goes, but I gotta warn you, they don't taste good, so you gotta sneak them into his treats. I was like, you know, my dog drinks out of the toilet, eats out of the garbage. He has a very broad palate. I'm pretty sure we're gonna be able to sneak these pills in on him. So I just put him on top of his food. And he came over and he inhaled it like I knew he would, right? He does that, but he does this. He goes, and then he goes. It's like, I didn't even know dogs could do that. I go back to the vet, I go, you know, my dog will literally eat his own shit. But he won't eat your pills. What are you putting in these pills that taste worse than shit? Hey, I know. How about you just make the pills taste like shit? The vet says to me, with a straight face, says, you know, if you have a problem with your dog eating his own poop, they have a spray that makes it unappetizing. I was like, you know, I have a million questions. The first one is, what kind of a maniac scientist is sitting at home going, I have to invent something that tastes worse than shit? Oh, it's a big day in that guy's life, huh? He went to scientist school. His parents are proud, huh? Hey, what are you working on, Bob? Double shit? Lifelong dream. And then let's say you did it. You pulled it off. You invented double shit. How would you know? Right? You're not gonna taste it. You gotta sneak it in on somebody. Hey, Steve, you hungry? I made some pudding. Oh, sure, I love pudding. Thank you very much. Ah! That tastes like shit! Just shit? And nobody pushes back against Wall Street. They're too powerful. The only people who'd even tried were a bunch of unemployed people called Occupy Wall Street, right? Occupy Wall Street tried to push back. Yeah. I don't know how you guys feel about Occupy Wall Street, but is there anything more disgusting than a bunch of filthy degenerates making a perfectly valid point? So the only mistake the Occupy Wall Street people made was asking for a living wage instead of a million-dollar parachute, right? That was their big mistake. And Newt Gingrich, he gave it to him. First of all, he said the Occupy Wall Street people should get a job, but first they should take a bath. Ha, oh, it's so funny. Oh, he's such a cut-up, that Newt Gingrich, isn't he? That was really funny. I mean, not as funny as the time he punked his wife by serving her divorce papers in front of her kids in her cancer recovery room, but still, it was still pretty funny. Newt Gingrich said that the Occupy Wall Street people don't know how to make money. They don't know how to create profit. That's what he said. And I was like, yes, they do. See, the problem with the Occupy Wall Street people is they think that if you work really hard and save your money, you can have a good life. And those people are living in a fantasy land known as the past. The way you make money now, any idiot knows, is you take your jobs and you outsource them to slaves in the third world, and you create bigger profits that way. Yes, it's the new American way. We take good American jobs, turn them into shitty jobs, and then we ship them overseas. But it is amazing to me that in the middle of the biggest ass-reaming this country's ever got for the military-industrial complex and Wall Street, that people still find time to be angry at the poor. Right? And I always say, if you find yourself being angry at someone lower on the economic ladder than you, pretty good chance you're being manipulated by someone higher on the economic ladder than you. Okay? My brother's angry at all the people on welfare. He hates them. He thinks they're scammers. He's like, oh, those people on welfare are scammers. I'm like, oh yeah, Danny. Those welfare people, they've rigged the system. So now they're the poorest people in the entire state. Oh, those fat cats at the bottom. So my brother watches too much cable TV, you know what I'm talking about. And he listens to too much AM radio, and they did a survey of people on welfare to find out what stuff they owned. And it turns out they own stuff. And that drove my brother fucking crazy. I come over to his house out of nowhere. He goes, did you know that 50% of the people in America say they're poor own a microwave? I was like, really? They think they're poor? And they have the ability to warm up a Hot Pocket? That is bullshit. They're probably laughing at us over a cup of noodles right now. He goes, you know 40% of the people in America who say they're poor own a washer and dryer? I'm like, you know, Danny, often I'll get up in the morning, walk over to my dryer, and go, you know, not bad. Doing pretty good. And then my uncle chimes in. My uncle, he goes, you know, Jimmy, 50% of the people in America say they're poor own a television. I grew up poor. We didn't have a TV until I was in high school. That's because they weren't invented till you're in high school. You're old. You remember when you wanted to listen to music, you had to put a bird's beak on a turntable. That's a Flintstones reference. Sure. And that's what's wrong with the kids today. The kids don't watch Flintstones. Where are they going to get a sense of morality and a work ethic if they don't listen to Kazoo and Fred? How are they going to know if they put too big of a rack of ribs on the side of their car, it will tip over? I like to get high and watch Christian television. Anybody else? I do. I like to watch the Faith Healers. And I watch so many, I actually have favorites. And my all-time favorite Faith Healer has got to be this guy, Benny Hinn. And Benny Hinn, he's very good at the healing. He's healing people left and right all day long. He's healing his ass off. But he himself is doing the most wicked comb-over. Which, don't you think if you could actually heal people? Would you take 5 seconds to fix your own bald spot? I mean, if you could straighten my spine, that should be a snap. And I'm not coming down on the comb-over. I'm going to do it when my time comes. I'm just saying you can't be a faith healer with a comb. It's like being a faith healer with a limp. Nobody's coming to your show. Hey, I'm here to heal you. Ow. Line up, I've got the gift from God damn this leg. Bobby, get my Percocets. My leg's killing me. I gotta heal these pricks. I kid him, but I think that faith healing must work. Because Benny Hinn plays like 90,000 people at a time. They come to these huge stadiums, he just taps them on the head and they're healed. He's like, boom, I can see. Boom, little toe straightened. And I just want to go to one of those stadium shows so I can go up to him afterwards. Hey, Benny, great show, listen. On the way home, why don't you stop by the hospital? A lot of sick people in there. Oh, that's right. You're full of shit. You know, I make fun of the religious, but I grew up Catholic myself. My parents were really Catholic, like they almost molested somebody. And they're hardcore. And I understand growing up religious. I was religious, and everybody needs something to believe in. But there's other things besides faith. I was watching the news when the Gulf oil thing happened, when BP did some nice landscaping down there. And they had this news report of these people in Alabama. They were on the beach, and oil had been washing up on the beach in Alabama. And they did like a prayer chain to help get the oil off the beach. And that's all they did, by the way. That's it. They didn't like rent a skimmer and then do a prayer chain, or put up buoys and then do a prayer chain, or get informed and vote correctly and then do a prayer chain. That's it. It's a prayer chain. And the reporter asked the guy in charge, he says, what do you want to happen from this prayer chain? And he said, oh, we want God to come down and take the oil off our beach. And I was like, yeah, if that doesn't work, why don't you call Aquaman? See if he'll help. It doesn't work like that. Prayer doesn't work like you're asking God to suspend physics. Hey, if it works like that, could you pray to God that he suspends gravity for 5 minutes so I can get that piano out of my fucking basement? I was doing that joke one time in Cleveland. And I had a lady, there was a lady, I did that joke and I heard this real loud noise over here. And I looked, and there was a lady putting on her coat. I don't know how you make noise doing that, but she did it. And I said, what are you doing? She goes, you're going to hell. That's what she said, just like that. And I was like, if you really thought I was going to hell, wouldn't you be nicer to me now? If you really thought I was going to burn in a lake of fire for eternity, wouldn't you be like, oh, you're going to hell? Do you deliver bad news like that to everybody? Do you go up to people in the emergency room after a motorcycle accident? You're going to be crippled! So I'm in my rental car in the parking lot of the Tropicana Hotel, and I'm trying to turn on the Tropicana Avenue. So I'm going to turn this way. So I'm looking this way, waiting for a break in traffic. And I don't realize there's a guy walking this way, right? So I'm inching out, and he's walking, and I hit him. Right? But I didn't knock him down, but I heard it was like, tch. I was like, oh, shit. I didn't know how to handle it. So I just rolled down my window and I go, I'm sorry. The guy looks at me, he goes, yeah, you're sorry after you hit me. That's how it works. Can't say I'm sorry before I hit you. That would show criminal intent. Hey, look, there's that guy. Sorry, for what? You'll see. Because normal family, normal people, when someone learns something new, they're like, oh, you learned something new. Teach it to me. I would also like to grow. But not in my family. If someone knew something they didn't, they got defensive and overreacting, you know. Like, here's an example. The most recent thing that happened is one of my brothers started their own company, and we're all sitting around. He goes, you know, I figured out I can make just as much money with 5 employees as I used to make with 6. And I go, hey, that's called the law of diminishing returns, I think. And my dad turns around and he goes, call it whatever you want. It's about making money, stupid. And that's my dad, right? As if to say, look at this guy. First he gets a book. Then he reads it. Retains that information. And then shares it at an appropriate moment like an asshole. And you know, you're from a dumb family, you just have to accept it. But like, I have a cousin, he's always pretending he's not, you know, dumb and everything. Like, I caught him one time, we were talking, I forget what about, he goes, yeah, well, I learned that when I was studying for my doctorate. I learned that, I was like, oh, you have a doctorate? And he was like, no, but I was studying for one. You can't just do that. You can't just say when I was studying for my doctorate if you never got it and then people think you got it. We're all studying for our doctorate. I'm thinking of my dissertation right now. You can't say that. Kind of bull. It's like, you know, when I was training for the Olympics. Oh, you're in the Olympics? No, but I trained. And then you take a dumb family and you add alcoholism. Which is a nice mix. My grandpa was an alcoholic, right? Although my family said he's just a big drinker, which is nice. Hey, there's not a fucked up thing there. And and then my dad didn't drink at all. Like, he stopped drinking cold, right? Like, he didn't drink at all. So, but he didn't go to like the therapy or AA. He just stopped drinking, and that's what they call a dry drunk, right? And what that means is my dad still had all the anger and rage of an alcoholic, but we never got to enjoy any of the fun drunk times. That was a real blast. Yeah, my dad had 2 emotions, angry and not angry yet. You know, and that, you gotta enjoy that when it's, I would call him, I'd call my brothers on the backyard, hey, come on in the house, dad's not angry yet, let's enjoy it. And we got hit and everybody, but everybody got hit. You know, we grew up poor, I don't know if you know, but poor people beat the fucking shit out of each other. But at least guys come out now. People are feel comfortable enough in our society, they come out, they let you know they're gay. When I was younger, guys didn't come out. You know, you just kind of found out somehow, right? Like, one time, I was about 20, I just turned 21, and I was out drinking with a friend of mine, and I got pretty drunk, and he's like, Jimmy, you're drunk, don't drive home. Stay at my apartment, I live around the corner. I was like, okay. So go back to his apartment, I get there, there's only one bed, I'm drunk, we're all men, I don't care, I hop in, right? I even take my clothes off. I wake up in the morning, he's got his hand in my underwear, and I had a morning boner. I was afraid he just thought I was digging it. So I didn't know how to handle it. I just did what any guy would have done. You know, I pretended I was asleep and let him jerk me off. I'm not gonna ruin a friendship. Plus he bought a CD. But my, they still do, you know, we still, in parts of the country, not only do we persecute gay people, we prosecute them. Like in Texas a few years ago, they had a case where the cops arrested two gay guys for having sex, just for having sex, and they charged them with sodomy. Now, I always thought I knew what sodomy meant, right? Whenever I hear sodomy, I would always think, over here, back door. But I did a little research for the show. It turns out sodomy not only means anal sex, but it also means oral sex. Yeah, I didn't know that. Did you? Dumb family. Yes, it means anal sex and oral sex. Why, those things aren't even close. Are you kidding me? Could you imagine if you hooked up with someone and they knew one definition of sodomy and you knew the other definition of sodomy? That can lead to a long night of apologies. Why did they do that? Why did they have one word to mean both things? Why does sodomy have to mean something fun that we all enjoy, and then something that's just downright fantastic? Did not see that coming. So my oldest brother, David, works for White Castle. He worked for White Castle his whole life. He eats White Castle three meals a day, and he makes fun of me because I live in California, and every once in a while I eat a salad. I get a call from him a few months ago. He goes, hey, Jimmy, I got back from the doctor. I just got back from the doctor, and it turns out I have prostate cancer. So the doctor told me I have to call my brothers and tell them to go get checked. And I was like, oh, David, sorry to hear that. So before I got checked, I went on the internet to look it up because that's always smart. And turns out if your dad has prostate cancer, it's a 50-50 chance that you'll get prostate cancer. But if your brother has prostate cancer, it's almost guaranteed that you'll get prostate cancer. And I'm like, oh, great. Now I'm going to get cancer because of my fucking brother, David. He's eating burgers, I'm eating lettuce, we're both getting ass cancer. Then about 2 weeks ago, I woke up in the morning, and I don't know how you guys wake up in the morning, but when I wake up, the minute my eyes open, all my problems come crashing down on me. So I wake up like this. All the shit I gotta do, and all the shit I didn't do, and all the stuff I know I'll never get to, and it's all on me. First thing in the morning, and then I gotta go to the bathroom. So I walk down the hall, all the problems on me, and I got my phone because God forbid I shit in peace. I gotta read the news. Oh, look, they cut someone's head off. Oh, that'll scare the shit right out of you. So I get finished going, and I go to flush the toilet, and it looked like in the toilet, like someone had dumped like a keg of blood into the toilet. And I was like, oh, David. And I instantly knew that whatever was wrong with me inside was so messed up that I was a dead man, right? Because I know this is bad, and I'm not gonna get chemo. I'm one of those guys. I'll just die, you know? So I'm like, I'm dead, right? And I would think that would scare me, but it didn't. Like, I felt great. Like, all my problems, like, I don't have to do any of that shit. I didn't plan for retirement. I win! I'm not kidding. I felt light as a feather. I was like, oh, what should I do? Oh, maybe I'll call my wife and share the good news. Oh, no, I'll let her finish her day at work. I didn't know what to do with myself, right? Because I'm not going to go work. I'm not going to write my show. I'm not going to edit my show. I'm not going to do anything. I don't have to do anything. I don't have to achieve anymore. I don't have to arrive. I don't have to fucking do anything except plan my death. And I was happy. So I'm like, what am I going to do now? Oh, I know. I'll take Brownie for a walk. So I take Brownie for a walk, and I wasn't, for the first time in my life, I wasn't worrying about the future, and I wasn't regretting the past. I was in the present moment, and I was energized. I felt great, and I noticed things I'd never noticed before in my life. There's a bougainvillea in front of my house. I was walking down the street, I'm like, oh, that's why they call this Palm Terrace, because it's lined with palm trees. I never noticed. I felt great. I'm dying. No worries. So I get back to the house. I don't have anything to do, so I go online, and I'm like, ah, let's look up what it means when you have a keg of blood in your toilet. I know what it means, but let's look it up. First two things that come up, yeah, you're dying. Ah, great. And the third thing that came up was, hey, did you drink beet juice? Yes. I drank a 32-ounce beet juice the night before. So I'm not dying? I'm gonna live? Fuck. It's funny, you know, my brother says Barack Obama's lucky. He is lucky. He's got the Peace Prize on his first day in office. And every time he runs for office, he gets an easy opponent, right? Like the first time he ran for Senate, nobody would even run against him. Republicans had to go out and recruit a guy to run against him. They got a guy named Alan Keyes, who is also black, but happens to be fucking crazy. So the Illinois voters had a choice between the black guy or the crazy black guy, and they chose the black guy. And then he ran against John McCain, who by the time he got the nomination, he was so old, he couldn't even remember how many houses he owned. John McCain, who picked the only person who read less than he did to be his vice president. And then this last time Barack Obama ran, he got to run against Mitt Romney. Really? The worst economy in 100 years, and he gets to run against Richie Rich in a bow tie. People go, oh yeah, Mitt Romney, he gave a speech to the NAACP, they booed him. No kidding. Really, he didn't connect? You mean a billionaire born into privilege with a wife who teaches horses to dance? Didn't connect with the NAACP? You gotta be shitting me. And Mitt Romney's big problem was that he pretended he wasn't rich. That's a mistake. Americans love rich people, no matter how you make your money. No matter how you make it legitimately, or if you sell drugs or worse on Wall Street, it doesn't matter. If you have a lot of money, Americans think you're awesome. And he pretended he didn't. He tried to pretend he was a regular person. Mitt Romney gave a speech where he said, "Hey, I just bought a 3-pack of shirts from Costco. I love them." "Oh, you got a 3-pack of shirts from Costco, Mitt? Those will go perfect with your handmade Italian, every fucking thing else you own." Even his wife tried to do that. She gave a speech at the convention. She said, "You know, Mitt and I were in college. We lived in a garden apartment with nothing to live on except our love for each other and Mitt's trust fund." "There were days we didn't know where our next Cadillac was coming from." "We had a lot of pasta and tuna fish. Luckily, Mitt owned controlling shares in Bumblebee and Ronzoni."